Yeah. Making her way to the mic. They start dimming the lights. You start feeling alright. From Birmingham, home of the Teddy Longs and the Ruben Studders. More once you discover. For all of the lovers, Whitney Houston and Roman Reigns. For all of the lovers, Mickey James and Marvin Gaye. For all of the lovers, Sasha Banks, Janelle Monáe, Silk, Sonic, and Paige. Allow me to say. Look, I just found a place, sweet escape for every one of us. I was kinda late, so I just made it off the struggle bus. Walking by the faith, cause I know it's right in front of us. Yo, I ain't with the hate, gotta focus on what's great. Ladies and gentlemen, Steph Hardy is on the air. Had to drop a couple bars just to make you all aware. So, sit back, relax, enjoy the show. You know I go by Joe or the rest of you.
Hey y'all, y'all already know what time it is. Happy International Women's Day and happy Women's History Month. Of course, this is the Hardy Wrestling Podcast with your girl Stephanie Hardy, but I'm not alone. I am here for a special collaboration episode this month with my sister, one third of the Jobber Tears podcast, a promoter, just an all-around superwoman in this wrestling space. I am here with Janelle from the HR. How are you, Janelle?
I'm good. I'm excited. This is something well in the works that we've been working behind the scenes on. So I'm always really big on if we have an idea and executing the idea. So to be able to execute it with you, it is an honor. I'm thankful and lucky to be able to have a platform, both of us being able to have the platforms that we have for people to watch and view and things of that nature. So it's going to be really good, interesting episode. It's a blast from the past in that sense. So we're going to take it back a little bit. And then the next act two on our Beyonce, will be a more modern situation. So I'm really excited and just can't wait to get into talking.
Absolutely. I am so excited that we had this idea, and it seems really crazy that this would be something that's necessary in the year 2024, but it seems like it is, because this idea sprung from the fact that in this recent season of WWE Rivals, and also when it comes to Biography WWE Legends, as much as we love our WWE content, they don't have any women's rivalries, you know, that they're expressing and talking about this season. So me and Janelle decided to put our amazing and brilliant Virgo heads together and do a series talking about our favorite women rivalries. So that is what we will be doing this month. And I am so happy and honored to be doing this with you. And we're collaborating again for an amazing month. And I'm just so happy. So in this episode, we will be talking about women's rivalries of the Attitude Era, or in this case, because these were sort of in the 2001-2002 way of timing, it's actually going to be sort of like a ruthless aggression entryway. So that's what we'll be doing. And we will first be talking about Chyna versus Ivory. And then we'll go on to talk about Jazz versus Trish Stratus. And both of these rivalries were amazing to sort of go back and look at. One I did not see in real time, but one I actually did witness in real time as a young fan. So the idea of sort of going back in time and watching all this stuff on Peacock is just really crazy. You know, just watching wrestling and how it's evolved over the years has just been insane.
Well, I mean, also for, I think now production-wise, it's just on another level. Like, WWE's production then versus now is like night and day. You can tell the difference just visually. It's just a very different presentation of wrestling. Like, back then, you know, we had the bra and panties. We had, you know, girls in the mud, you know, all type of stuff. And like now you got women that are in the Elimination Chamber. They have their own Money in the Bank match. Like they have their own Royal Rumble match. Like there's so many different things that now versus then, like we always like, you know, it's always interesting to see like where they come from to where they are now, and understanding the road to that type of success. So
yeah, it's insane all the things that have changed, and even from them being in the ring longer. Like, we'll definitely get into it the further we get into the episode, but let's go to the comments first. Rikarsha, hey, thank you for watching. And Daryl Shaw, thank you for watching. Rikarsha saying,
not thank him, he's a menace. But no, mean, that he, that's my good friend out of Atlanta, fellow wrestler over there. So no, he's a ball of fun, but he's a menace, I will tell you.
Yes, Rikarsha saying she can't wait for us to get into all four of the women we'll be talking about. Yeah, we're going to get into it. But before we get into China versus Ivory first, we kind of have to paint a picture of what wrestling looked like back in the time in which they were fighting each other, which was in 2001, the early part of 2001, which for me was a pretty crazy year because that was the year my sister was born. Shout out to her. she's a 2001 baby. So my life, yeah, so my life definitely changed in a huge way with that. And yeah, let's just look at what wrestling looked like. You know, here's the who's who. I found this art piece that someone did for a pay-per-view back in the day, and you just had a Kurt Angle with hair. You had Stone Cold Steve Austin, The Rock out there in the front. You had Triple H, The Undertaker.
Y2J.
Mm-hmm. You had the Dudley Boys. You had the Acolytes, APA. Bradshaw with hair. Like, it was just so much going on at that point. Like, it's just funny when you paint a picture of how wrestling looked back then and just how it looks now, and how some of these people actually wind up running, you know, and have places of power in wrestling now, or have just retired and just are just chilling out and living their best life, or some who are still wrestling.
Mm-hmm. Or like, listen, if somebody would have told me then that The Undertaker would be having a podcast in 2024, I'd be like, nah, never, not Mark. No, Mark got a whole podcast that he does now on his free time. So,
yeah, I wouldn't have believed that either, but this is where we're at. And hey, Michael, thank you so much for watching. I'm so happy you're watching along on YouTube, and thank everyone for watching on whatever platform you're watching on. But yeah, this was 2001. This was WWF. This was shortly before they switched over to WWE. So this is where we were at. And also Rikishi's in that picture too, you know, before him and his family proceeded.
That was the whole I did it for The Rock.
Yes.
That's the whole time period.
Absolutely. So around this time when China and Ivory were feuding with each other, they were on the road to WrestleMania X7. And for a lot of people, this one is very special because this had, of course, The Rock versus Stone Cold Steve Austin in one of their many amazing matches that they had over the course of the last few years. And at that point, everyone, you know, excitement was at an all-time high for this event. There were lots of different feuds going on. And one of them definitely was China and Ivory. And, you know, around this time, women, of course, were known as divas, and they weren't necessarily like given a whole lot of time to, you know, express a lot of what they were feeling and their stories. But they did have a couple of rivalries in there, you know, that were given time to cook, as we say now. And this was one of them, which a lot of people don't necessarily talk about as much, that did have a little bit of a time to cook and did have a story behind it that was very intriguing if you go and watch it back. Like, it was really interesting to go and watch it back and see how this feud got started. So at the time, what you said, Janelle?
I said, we're good, all right, to censor. Shout out to Bull Buchanan over there with his son at NXT. I always pop for him. But it's very interesting that they got a group of half of them godfathers going from holes to wearing a tie. So Val Venus going from Hello Lady to just sirens. Like, so it's very interesting that that time that they decided to put this group together.
Yeah, it is interesting because at this time you had so many different things, you know, coalescing with WWF. A lot of people were upset with a lot of the content they were showing during the Attitude Era because it was so edgy and so raunchy. And the Right to Censor group was basically like a response to a lot of the parents who were saying, you know, our children shouldn't be watching this. Y'all should make it more family oriented. This is dumb. Why are y'all being this ratchet? And they created this group, and it was hilarious watching the Godfather become the good father and having Val Venus, who was all, hello ladies, with his towel, and
you know, covering himself up and all of the above, and just everyone who was in this group. And then Ivory was a part of it as well. They just look like kids in private school.
For me, it was always the theme song. It was always the like, it was always like, you already knew. And I mean, it goes to always telling people like how important theme songs are, because it off the first beat, you know who it was. So off the first siren, you knew it was Right to Censor coming to either just fuck something up or bother somebody about something. And all of this, if I'm not mistaken, it all stems from China being on the cover of Playboy.
Yes, exactly. I was about to get to that. Like, all of this feud started because China at the time was, you know, her fame was at an all-time high in the WWE. Of course, she started as one of the original members of D-Generation X with Triple H and Shawn Michaels. But of course, you know, the more she started fighting and the more she started leaning into her beauty and everything, and also just the more she started fighting with men too, she started becoming more of a mainstream star on her own, and which led her to being on the cover of Playboy, which was a huge deal back then. Now, of course, we weren't reading that because that's not appropriate, but you know, anytime any WWF diva was on the cover of Playboy, you knew about it because they plastered it everywhere, all over commercials, all over, you know, Raw and SmackDown programming. And China, I believe, was the first one to be on the cover of Playboy, wasn't she?
I feel like Sable, it happened after. And mm-hmm. I feel like Tori Wilson, I think, was on Playboy scene, and it happened after, too. So, but it was the first time, like, it was a really big deal. It kind of was that crossover appeal into a different market, for especially for WWE, I think, at the time. But it also played to the point, and you mentioned it, where she was at a point in her career where she really was just wrestling guys. Like, it wasn't even, like, she, and that's why I think when we spoke about, you know, the creating of which rivalries we wanted to talk about, I specifically wanted to talk about this one just because it was one that she didn't even want to do. Like, she was not on the bandwagon of wrestling Ivory, wrestling any female at that point, because she just felt like she was at a certain point in her in-ring and in her career, that she, it almost for her, I think, felt like going backwards. So it's very interesting. I always thought this rivalry in particular was interesting because of the manner that it happened in, what happened after. Like, it's just everything from beginning, middle, and it doesn't get talked about, but it's such a really good rivalry.
Yeah, it is. And the thing about it is, like, it's funny that you would, that people would, that she would think that that would be a step back in terms of fighting women. But you know, when it came to what she wanted to do, she knew what she wanted to do. It's just that the rest of the world just wasn't ready for her. And it's really crazy when you think about it. Like, they had a star on their hands that really wanted to push women's wrestling to another level, and they kind of just squandered it and didn't let her rock and do her thing because of reasons. But you know, we'll get into it a little bit later. The reason why, of course, we did talk about how China was on the cover of Playboy and how the Right to Censor group hated the idea that she was on the cover of Playboy and just wanted her to be more respectful. So they wound up attacking her in the ring on an episode of Raw and giving her, you know, a neck injury where she said she had injured three of her discs by them giving her a pile driver. And if you look at that pile driver in that episode of Raw, like, it was really rough looking, because this was one of those instances where a lot of wrestlers say when you're doing a move like that, you're not supposed to land on your butt. You're supposed to land on your knees. One of the members, I believe it was Val Venus, he did not land on his knees. He landed on his butt. And, you know, storyline wise, she was injured and she wound up having to get MRIs and surgery to the point to where the doctors weren't sure if she was ever going to wrestle again. And China was brought to tears about it. She was really upset. She had two different interviews talking about how she was working her way back into the ring. And the Right to Censor group even insulted her. And it was just really hard to kind of look at, you know, with them insulting her. Like, I was just like, oh my God, y'all are like really rude for this.
Oh yeah, listen, if y'all go back and watch them promos, that Ivory and all of them, Stevie Richards, all of them will talk so much hot shit about China when she was injured. It's funny, but it's not funny at the same time, because they're like, oh my God, how can someone talk about somebody like that and they got a neck injury? But then for them, they're like, well, if you weren't doing sinister things like being on Playboy, none of this would have happened. So it was an interesting take on, you know, the injury. And, you know, always people always, you know, and this is not too long after the untimely passing of Owen. So a lot of people in that time felt that it was a little inappropriate for them to be leading in the neck injury as the storyline. But also too, it just she sold it. She played it well. Like, I remember watching it in real time. Like, I thought when Chyna said, "I don't know if I'm going to be able to wrestle again," I really thought she would never be able to wrestle again. Like, I was like, "Oh my God, this is real." So like for me, in my early adolescent, I'm sitting here like, "Oh my God, like this is a real thing." It felt very real because that's how it was presented. So it's kudos to her on top of everything, you know, to be able to sell such a thing, to be able to convince the audience and get that sympathy, because it all rode all the way up to, I believe, Rumble. And then that was a thing. And then that was, you know, once again, the road to WrestleMania. So it all made sense.
Yeah, it did. And it's so funny that you mentioned the idea of the Owen tragedy and everything. Because at one point, I do believe, leading up to the Royal Rumble, where Chyna did fight through her injury and proceeded to fight Ivory for the women's title, you know, she was dominating Ivory throughout that entire match, as we get to their Royal Rumble match and watching it back. Like, she dominated her throughout the whole match. They fought into the audience. And as you can see, she was pressing her. And when I was watching this match and watching her press Ivory like this, I just couldn't help but feel like I was watching, like, a Rhea Ripley or a Bianca Belair doing a press like it's normal now, like today. And just seeing that just brought chills to me as I was looking at it. And I was just like, man, she really did pave the way for a lot of what we see today when it comes to the women. And it's so interesting that during this match, you know, this match wound up ending with her having, you know, throwing herself and her neck out from doing like a backflip into Ivory, into the corner, and then she fell out because her neck was hurting. But then after she had fell out and after Ivory had covered her for the 1-2-3 to retain the title, you know, Jerry the King Lawler was on commentary at the time, and he ran to check on Chyna the same way he ran to check on Owen when all of that went down. So I thought it was interesting that you brought that up, because that's the first thing that clicked into my mind, you know, when I saw that. I was just like, oh wow, like, this is really interesting that they're playing into that type of sadness. But, you know, it's like you said, Chyna played her role really well.
And we should have known that, you know, and I will say, even though it's not always the right thing, WWE will definitely play into some either real life shit or some like serious tone, you know, style, because it, at the end of the day, it evokes emotion. Like, when I look back and I remember watching it, I can tell you, I was sitting here like upset, like Chyna will never wrestle again. And they gave me the opportunity to go through that emotion of like, oh my God, this could be a thing. To then, you know, us getting to WrestleMania and then that being a thing, it was like, you know what? Well, it was well worth the little journey we did take, because she overcame the obstacles. She was able to get the pop that she deserved, all because of the story. So, but it was an interesting take that. It wasn't too long after that they, you know, they used the neck injury and things of that nature. So I thought it was just as interesting. I was like, oh, okay, but it's WWE. What you expect?
Yeah, and at that time, if they did something that was controversial, like, they didn't shy away from it. Like, the way that they would now, like, because, of course, you know, things are different with them being publicly traded and also with them being combined with the UFC, with TKO. Like, there's so much stuff that they did back then that you know they definitely wouldn't do now. Also, especially with social media existing and people raising their voices about things that they find inappropriate, there are a lot of things that they would not do or get away with now that they did back then. But Chyna did play her role really well, and I can definitely tell, you know, the tone that it brought, because the way that she was laying there and saying that she couldn't move was just so sad. I was just like, oh my God, like, this is crazy.
Yeah, like, this is real. Like, get the ambulance, don't move her, slow. And they did all of it. They slowly dragged her out of the ring into the stretcher. They stretched her back into the back. Like, they did everything that they were supposed to do to make you feel like, oh my God, she will never wrestle again. It is crazy that that's what they had to do, but it was, to me, it was worth the lead up, because then now you're like, you know, Ivory every week was, you know, always talking shit, always saying something, and then when China came back, it was like, oh my God. So nah, I loved it. Not during, I was very upset, but bigger picture, I loved it.
Yeah, absolutely. So she was out for a little bit in the midst of this after her Royal Rumble match. And at the time, Ivory was really feeling like, okay, well, you're not out here to fight. You're ruining this opportunity for me to have my match at WrestleMania. So I'm just going to teach you a lesson. And she brought out this cardboard cutout of China.
She started swinging the cardboard. If y'all go back and watch that Raw, that I don't even have to go back and watch it. Like, I vividly see her clothesline the thing. I said, oh my God.
It was so hilarious. Like, the thing I love about Ivory is the fact that throughout her career, she's definitely leaned into a lot of goofy stuff. And even not even just goofy stuff, but stuff that, you know, would be really campy and fun, because a lot of people don't know that when Ivory got her first start in wrestling, like, she got it when she was wrestling for GLOW, which was of course founded by David McLean, who is also the founder of WOW, which is currently in its other run right now as WOW Superheroes. And she was definitely, you know, one of those women that sort of, you know, paved the way for a lot of crazy character work. And she was really brilliant with this in bringing out this cardboard cutout and talking to it as if it was real and telling China, like, you ruined all of this for me. You are nothing. You're not a real woman. You're fake. You know, everything about you, I can't stand. It was crazy. Yeah. What were you about to say, Janelle?
No, I was saying, like, she was like, how dare you? Like, who are you to take this opportunity away from me? Like, she was so disgusted at the fact that old girl got hurt in that match that now she can't possibly go to WrestleMania. Like, I was just, but she sold it so well. And, like, I feel like is one of those unspoken heroes, especially in that division in that time, because she was super consistent. She was super good in the ring. She, you know, she, for me, she held up a lot of, like, women in the matches that were going on. So I totally, like, when she got into the Hall of Fame, I was just like, that's due just, because she, like you mentioned, she paved the way, and, you know, one of the original GLOW girls to come now into professional wrestling, like, that's a big deal. And, you know, and she didn't take it lightly, she didn't take it for play, like, she took it serious, and that was another reason why this rivalry always sticks to me, because I felt like it was two women wrestlers who took the art serious and was serious about how they wanted the match to look, and also a respectable build up to a story. That's what we all complain about now, is always the storylines for women and how storylines can be built up for women. And these two are a good, like, foundation blueprint on how to build a storyline from even a 6 month. It was a solid 6 months that they went. So they showed you, like, if you put in the work, you're consistent, and you follow through, they showed how to have a successful lead up to WrestleMania.
Yeah, they really did. And that was very revolutionary for the time. When you think about all the things. Yeah, when you think about all the things those women had to go through, you know, to even just get on TV for only a few minutes, for them to have had a storyline like this to cook back then in the early 2000s was just really rare stuff. And, you know, people were into it because Ivory was just a complete, you know, angry heel that was trying to be righteous and upright. And you have this raucous crowd that just wants to see women, you know, for better or for worse, be all, you know, sexy and all that other stuff.
They want to see women naked at that time. It's like, not everybody want to be like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And everyone has that right. But, you know, back then it was just a really easy foil. So she's talking all this trash of this cardboard cutout. And finally, China comes out and then she signs this agreement that Ivory talks about, which is a hold harmless agreement that says that if she does, you know, agree to this match at WrestleMania, that she will be held responsible for getting her neck hurt if something happens to her. And of course, you know, China comes out, you know, looking better than ever, and she signs the agreement, and then we get our match at WrestleMania. And this match was just really, it was relatively short, of course, when you think about.
Not even relative. It was short. Y'all had all this time to build up this rivalry, and y'all gave me a 2-minute match. It was unacceptable.
Yeah, it was kind of unacceptable in the sense that it was just 2 minutes in comparison to the other matches that had, you know, probably much longer, time frame. But the funny part about this was just the fact that I believe the way that this match went, it was a means of which Ivory was able to make China just look strong. After having humiliated her, and also China humiliating Ivory, because at one point during their feud, Ivory was supposed to be in a bra and panties match with Trish, and then China came out on that episode of SmackDown and wound up stripping her herself. They had basically just been embarrassing each other the whole time in this lead up, and it was just really funny. But leading up to their match at WrestleMania, in this 2 minutes, all you saw was China basically treating Ivory like a rag doll. It was so crazy. Like, you just saw, like, Ivory barely got any offense in. And this was where, of course, you saw a more iconic version of her press that she did earlier at the Royal Rumble. And of course, it's fabulous now, because when you go back and watch that WrestleMania, you see everyone in the crowd taking pictures physically, you know, not with phones, but with actual cameras. And you see all the lights, just all the light bulbs just flashing as she, you know, just pressed her up. And you could just tell she just looked like a star. She had on her purple outfit with her purple headband with the diamonds dripping from it. She just looked like a goddess here. Like, I even shared a video on my socials of her entrance with the bazooka, and it just made me just grab my chest and be like, man, like, China was really a star out here, and people loved her, and I wish she knew and could fully internalize just how loved and appreciated she was at that time, or just even period, even afterward, because she was just, her aura was just unbelievable.
She was one of a kind, and that's why a part of me gets angry towards the end, like this particular moment in the feud at the end, because they did so well to build up the entire rivalry to then only give us like a blink of an eye of a match. I didn't feel like it was great for China, and I don't feel like it was great for Ivory. Like, both ladies put so much time and effort and energy into building it up, and to have the match just end like in a flop almost. Yes, China was always going to look and give the dominance, of course, but I just feel like the ladies could have definitely told a better story versus letting China just look strong and then ending the match and her winning. The way she even pinned her, I was just like, damn, she didn't even have a fighting chance now. She just laid back and pinned her. And I said, well, what was the point? why was I just on a wild goose chase for 6 months? That's how it made me feel. But once again, I try to look at bigger picture in these instances. And as you mentioned, this match, this rivalry in itself, it laid the foundation for future rivalries of such. Like, for two adversaries to go against each other, because one person doesn't agree with what the other person, you know, does. And honestly, I feel like if we didn't have this rivalry, we wouldn't have had the rivalries that we will talk about in Act 2 of this series, where we talk about the Four Horsewomen. And I truly believe that if China didn't do this, she didn't have this moment, we wouldn't have had other moments that we're going to talk about, and other moments that you guys as fans can remember, even in the modern era, because she laid that foundation to have those type of matches. Like, for her to even be on WrestleMania speaks volumes. And I think even the little things in that, we don't, you know, she unfortunately can never hear us as fans really give her those flowers, because there's a lot of women even today, even with Rhea with the gear, and she had the chaps gear, like, you know, it's the little details and, you know, women in wrestling paying homage to her, and also to Ivory too, because these are both two well women wrestlers, and they don't get as much, you know, flowers and opportunities. So that's why it's always one of those feuds that I love to talk about, but I just always hated the ending. But I always love, because we wouldn't have women's wrestling if we didn't have this feud, in my opinion.
I absolutely agree with that opinion, but I do have a question for you, Janelle. Were you watching pay-per-views, you know, as they happened back then?
Okay, so I'm gonna tell you something, and my mom probably is gonna be upset. So back in the day, we had, so here in New York, we had Time Warner. So Time Warner is, anybody that knows, they had the remote. So you had the remote, and it, you had an A, B, and C.
Mm-hmm.
So
of course, had that too.
Okay, so of course B was for buy. So there was a period of time where I was just buying them and just hoping and praying ain't nobody notice I was buying them. So then my mom ended up getting like a $300 cable bill one day, one time. And I think because it was for like WrestleMania, son, because WrestleMania used to be like, normally the pay-per-views were like $34.99, and then I think WrestleMania was like $49.99 or something like that. So it was always more than the regular pay-per-view. So it got to the show, she caught on, and she was just like, well, how are you buying all these things? And I was just sitting here like, oh, I don't know. I just was clicking the buttons. I have no idea, even though I didn't know it was buy, is B is buy. So then she put the parental controls on, so now I had to add for the pay-per-views to buy them. So she always did, though. It was just her way of saying, like, just ask, Janelle. Like, you don't gotta just click and act like nothing happened. So at that time, I was, like, I would say definitely from 14 on, I was watching pay-per-views on a regular basis. I will say that. Like, even, because what, this is WrestleMania 17. What year is that? Is that 2001?
The feud started around, is in 2001. So yeah, this is 2001.
So then the next year, so the following year, Survivor Series 02 was my first pay-per-view. Like, ever, like, live and in color at the Garden. So, like, definitely around that time, I was watching live pay-per-views. I just had to add because I got caught.
I think that's funny. That's really funny. I just know that could not have happened in my house. Like, see, I would watch the pay-per-views when my father would buy them on DVD. So it would be after the fact. Mm-hmm. So that's how I would see pay-per-views, and eventually Dad started purchasing the pay-per-views. You know, if I asked or expressed interest in wanting to watch it specifically, then, you know, he would start ordering them. And then, of course, they eventually transitioned into the streaming components, and then after that, we were able to watch them all. But I was definitely a DVD girl growing up.
No, I would say, you know what, because we had, like, Tower Records, we had, like, certain spots, so I, like, had an extensive, like, DVD wrestling collection. Like, I had the 3-disc Macho Man set, I had the 3-disc Triple H set. Like, I had some DVDs, but they were more for me collectibles than, like, watching it. And that's why, like, now, even with, like, people always complain about Peacock, low-key, I just be like, I'm blessed that there is a place that I don't necessarily have to pay an astronomical amount of money to watch wrestling in the 80s, in the 90s, in the 99, in the 2000s. Like, I don't gotta stress myself to watch old wrestling. So, like, we can right now go back and watch and put on WrestleMania 17 with no issues, you know? So I like that we're in that era where it's accessible and we don't gotta lie, because I definitely was lying. I definitely, like, and you know what was always catching me up, though? It was because, if y'all remember back in the day, they used to have free-for-all before the pay-per-views. So free-for-all, you would literally be watching it on the pay-per-view channel for free for the 30 minutes before the pay-per-view. So I watched the free-for-all and be like, well, what's happening? And then when it says you gotta buy, I was just like, well, then shit, let's watch it. But then I got caught. I had to ask.
It's okay. Okay, Daryl in the comments, he's saying, guess I'm the old person here because I sure was watching them on VHS. No, I was watching them on VHS's too. Like, my dad would tape, you know, wrestling, you know, back to back, you know, on the nights he would miss it because he would have to go to work. So I was watching them on VHS's too. So eventually, but I was in sort of like the middle ground where people were transitioning from VHS's to DVDs. So that's just, you know, so I, you know, I had the VHS thing too. But yeah, China won this championship, but I believe I did read and find out that she didn't hold this title long because this was where WWE and her had a difference of direction with her creatively, like you mentioned before, Janelle, with her wanting to do more and fight the men and not necessarily be just a women's champion. And I believe in hearing from other documentaries, she wanted to be treated essentially the same as any man that was the top star. And back then, they did not, you know, open the doors for that or didn't have an open mind for that. So she wound up leaving the company, and sadly, she would never return to the company, and she would wrestle, you know,
randomly, like I believe in New Japan she had one match, but she would do random appearances. But of course, you know, we know a lot of how her story went, and sadly she would pass away in 2016. And then she would be posthumously inducted into the Hall of Fame along with DX. But sadly, but in my mind, I really feel like she should be in the Hall of Fame on her own merits, because this woman made a lot of history.
I think that even now, to talking about the Hall of Fame class of 2024 now and the three inductees, like there's, because there's a shift in power and it's been a shift in power, I think the viewpoint of certain things may also change. Like I do think that, you know, she'll get her rightful place solo in the Hall of Fame one day, and I don't think that they wouldn't do that. I think it's dope that she did go in for DX, because that was her career before she did singles. So I think the acknowledgement, just them acknowledging her a part of DX, I thought was a big deal. Because it was one of those things that we all was on the edge of our seats. Like, are they going to talk about her? Are they going to mention China? Are they going to? And it was just like, all of them have said nothing but great things about her. And I just don't think, I just think the personal stuff was a little, you know, a little messy. But professionally, you know, there's a love there for her. And I think down the road, I don't think too far down the road, but I do think down the road, they will induct her by herself.
Yeah, I believe they would too. And then, you know, you do have a subsection of women's wrestling fans online who want, you know, her legacy to be enshrined using like a mid-card title, because she was the first woman to win the Intercontinental Championship and making history as a, you know, woman who wanted to fight men and stuff like that. And she entered the Men's Royal Rumble, because of course at that time the women didn't have their own Royal Rumble. So she did all of that, and she had no problem fighting men in the King of the Ring tournament as well. So she made a lot of history when it comes to intergender wrestling, and she definitely deserves, you know, more tributes and more flowers, because she definitely was the ninth wonder of the world, and she will always be my girl. So I'm so happy we had this chance to talk about her and talk about Ivory too, because she's also a Hall of Famer as well. She's not really active, you know, a whole lot in the wrestling business, but she does make appearances every now and again, but she seems to be living a peaceful life. So we love that for her, and I love this rivalry, and I love being able to watch it back at this point, because this was just really cool to look at. Because like I said, I didn't see it when it happened in real time, but watching it, I can appreciate it right now and what and how it leads to where we are now. So it was great. I like it. So yeah, so now we move forward to another great rivalry in the form of Jazz versus Trish Stratus.
I fell this... a Virgo. I'm not a Virgo. My birthday in August.
Jazz?
Mm-hmm. I think she's like August the 21st or something like that. Like, she a Virgo. Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's cool. Oh,
I
man.
I found that out when we had interviewed her. I popped. I was just like, wait, what? Your birthday's when? I said, girl, you can always say anything to me now.
That's amazing. Like, oh my God, that makes me feel really great. Yes, August Virgo, we love it. So yeah, this was a rivalry that I'm so happy I got to witness, you know, in my lifetime, in my fandom, because this was right where I was getting more back into wrestling in the 2000s, into the Ruthless Aggression era, after the Attitude era. And this, just watching them fight each other back and forth every week was just like, yo.
Yo, they gave them time, like, and that's what I mean. It's the little detail things that you think about, like, because what Raw, I think then was still, I think could have still been 2 hours, it might have been three, but for the ladies to have they literally had a segment like every week. Like, there was not a week on Raw that you did not see either Jazz messing with Trish or Trish trying to mess with Jazz. Like, so I always admire the fact that they were consistent, and that's why, once again, it's a rivalry that I always hold near and dear to me, because of the consistency of it.
Yeah, I agree. I hold it near and dear to me too, because of course, in terms of representation, when it comes to Black women at this time, really the only three Black women you would say you saw at this time, it was Jazz and it was Jacqueline, and later on it was Crystal on the SmackDown side of things. But really, those were the only three Black women that you had or that you would see on Raw and SmackDown on a more consistent basis. And I just remember the first time I saw Jazz, I was just like, yo, like, who is this woman coming in here beating on Trish like a crazy person? It was just really insane. So to go back and see the chronological order of how things got started with them was really, really enlightening. So this feud got started when Jazz made her debut, when it came to the whole invasion angle that was going on between WWF and WCW and ECW, because Paul Heyman, who is going into the Hall of Fame this year, was on commentary with JR at the time, and he definitely put over Jazz during her debut during a pay-per-view match where there was a six-pack challenge for the vacated women's title that was vacated by Chyna. And even though she wound up not winning this match, Trish Stratus won, I believe, she still had an amazing showing here, and I was just really glad to hear that Paul Heyman was able to put her over as a former ECW staple. Like, that was really amazing to hear. So later on, Jazz would go on to challenge Trish Stratus by becoming a number one contender by defeating Jacqueline. And she would go on to fight Trish Stratus at the Royal Rumble 2002. And Jacqueline was a special guest referee. And looking at Jacqueline in her outfit as a special guest referee, I was gagged, because I'm just like,
baby, I know your chest gotta hurt, sis, too. Oh. I mean, she was outside, though.
Mm-hmm.
I love that for her. Like, when I met, have you ever met her?
I've never met Jacqueline.
Oh, okay. So when you do, you'll probably get the same feeling I did. Like, when I met her, and I met her Dallas WrestleMania. So what was that? That was, 2 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
And we went to WrestleCon, and we met, and, like, me, Danny was with me. And I was like, nah, we gotta go meet Jacqueline. Like, for real. Because, you know, for us as Black women in wrestling, like, you gotta touch every Black woman wrestler there is. Like, I don't care where in the world, but if they're in the building, you gotta touch them at least, because you gotta give them their flowers. So we were lucky enough that when we met her, like, we were just able to, like, ain't nobody else was really around, so we had, like, kind of all the time in the world with her, and, like, we just talked and gave her flowers live and in color, because it was just, like, you got to understand, like, at a time where there weren't any of us, you were there for that. And I even told her, I said, listen, I was watching WCW when you was working with Kevin Sullivan. Like, I watched all that. I watched when you came in through with Mark Merrill. I watched all that. So, like, for me, it was bigger than life situation, because I was like, man, like, you Jazz, like, you women, you Black women definitely made me look at the team and be like, oh my god, there's somebody that looks like, that's somebody that's my auntie on TV. That's auntie on TV. And I love the fact that we progressed in such a way that now we can be like, oh, our sis is on TV, our auntie and them is on TV. Like, it's expanded in such a beautiful, almost like a flower blooming. They were the seeds in planting where we have, you know, Black women wrestlers now, like Bianca, like Sasha, like Lash, like Jakarta, like, the list can go on and on, but Jacqueline and Jazz were those seeds that were first planted for women of color to really shine in the way that they did. So, I mean, yeah, you know, she showed her ass and titties, but, you know, she's showing her gifts, you know, we can't be mad about that. But
yeah, you can't
be mad about that. She was showing her goodies, like, you know, whatever. Like, if these white women could do it, we could do it too. Okay?
Yeah, yeah, and the funny part about this, in this Royal Rumble match, just watching Jacqueline in this outfit just gave me Aja. I was just like, I need to see Aja cosplay this version of Jacqueline at some point, because the braids were on point, the outfit was on point. I was like, Miss Ma'am is out here looking like she about to pull her a man. Like, the melanin was popping. Like, I just enjoyed it. I enjoyed it so much. But yeah, like, this match was very hard hitting in the sense that you saw, you know, what Jazz had to offer in ring and the aggression that she had towards Trish Stratus at this time. She felt like Trish was, you know, nothing more than just a paper champion that was just there to look cute and not really, you know, fight the way that Jazz does. And there were plenty of times in watching all the matches that they've had where you could see a lot of moments where Jazz sort of outclassed Trish. No shade to Trish, because I love me some Trish. It's just the fact that you could see that she was miles ahead of her in the wrestling game, and she was just more aggressive towards her, you know, in the match, and even aggressive towards Jacqueline, pushing her multiple times, saying, look, what are you going to do to me? Like, I'll beat your ass too. Like, it was crazy. But, you know, in the midst of all of this, Trish wound up retaining the title, and she was upset about it. But this is not where the feud would end, because they would go on to face each other for the title on a Monday Night Raw. And in February of 2002. And this was where, here again, this aggression from Jazz was on display. And it just seemed like Trish wasn't fully prepared for a lot of the abilities that Jazz had. And this was where Jazz actually wound up winning the title on this episode of Monday Night Raw in 2002. She executed her chicken wing, like her flying leg drop, because she would literally jump in the air and then hit the leg drop. She wasn't one of those people that would just swing into her leg drop. Like, she would jump in the air and boom, and hit you with it. Like, and then she would even submit her out. Like,
I feel like she choked out.
Like she would just submit her out with different maneuvers, like an STF. Like, Jazz was just far ahead of her time. And then I also felt that the audience, you know, felt like maybe they couldn't connect with her because she was like ahead of the game and ahead of what they were used to. And they fully didn't appreciate her for that. And then on top of that, people loved Trish Stratus as well. She was very over at that time, you know, for so many reasons. So anybody that was the antagonist to her, they would just automatically, you know, turn away. But Jazz was out here,
was doing the damn thing. I think a lot of them fans in that time really just looked at her like, who was this black lady hitting her? who was she hurt for? Like, I think a lot of fans didn't connect with Jazz, because I think, you know, for one of the first times, it was, you were seeing, you was watching women's wrestling. You was watching someone actually no technique, no psychology, no the spots. Like, and I think, you know, at that period of time and how the women were being showcased, it was a lot of, like, just pretty faces. And you know, and I'm just, you know, I'm going to do a sable bomb, or I'm just going to do, you know, a frog splash, you know, or, you know, just something like one move. And, you know, I think Jazz was one of the first to show, like, a different style of wrestling that a lot of fans didn't see a woman being able to do. So I think, but it goes to attest to her to be able to bring that out and showcase that. Even if people are confused and don't know, you know, what they're watching, there's still a level of respect there that, oh, she came out and did the crossface chicken wing. Like, she did Bob Backlund's move. Like, what are we talking about here? You know, like, so I feel like I think the fans weren't, it was just, you know, where her, I always look back with Jazz and I always say it was the right person, wrong time. I think had Jazz, even in the late, like in the 2000s, like 2010, 2012, like in that area of where, you know, women's wrestling was starting to, you know, really progress and really being showcased in a different way, then I definitely think Jazz would have been such a, Jazz then is really low-key what Nia Jax is right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that Nia is, you know, it's just, I mean, outside of weight differences, but just the hard hitting style that Nia at times, Nia can present, Jazz was that person. So, and when you have that person, you know, and you're not used to that, because now we're in a time period in women's wrestling where we're kind of used to that, people aren't always receptive of it. So I always felt like even when Jazz won that belt, and even interviewing her, when we spoke to her, she, you know, it was a lot of like, she won it and then they didn't know what to do with her. It was always, that was one thing I never forget when we interviewed her, that, you know, I was able to ask her, like, how did you really feel about that? Like, what was your involvement in your creative? And one thing I never forget, she said, she was just saying, they didn't know what to do with me. Creatively, they did not know how to book me. They didn't know how to present me. And it wasn't such a, like, it's not a shade to them. It's just when you are not used to presenting a Black strong woman in that manner and in that nature, you're not going to know what to do with them. That's just simple. It's not something that they didn't want to do. It's that they didn't know what to do. And when you don't know what to do, you can't fault for somebody for not knowing the unknown. But I definitely think, like, I really look back at this feud and I say, it was the right person. It's the right, this feud right now, this is basically Nia Jax and Becky Lynch. If you look at it from where it was, where it started, like, Jazz debuting and coming out, Nia Jax single-handedly gave Becky the opportunity to start the man. Like, you got to look at all those, like, kind of, like, comparisons and you're like, oh, but now we're in a different time where we're glued to the TV with women's wrestling. It's almost like if you watch, and I tell people all the time, if you watch NXT, you get two to three women's wrestling matches a week, just on a 2-hour show. So now we're in a different time where it's more received, it's more welcome, it's more, you know, it's more appreciated. Where at this time with these two ladies, a lot of the fans, they already had a love for Trish, so they were never gonna deviate from that. So Jazz entering the picture, I don't think she even really had a fighting chance to really be with the fans and have that experience. But also too, she was a heel, so I definitely was here for the heel work. But I definitely think, you know, because it was something out of their norm, a lot of people just didn't really pay attention to it.
Yeah, it's really hard. And I'm glad that you guys did have the opportunity to interview her. It's funny, you know, y'all got to interview her and I got to commentate for her during her retirement tour. Like, just her being as open and as nice as she was to me while I was starting my commentary career was just like, that's something I'll never forget. Like, she was just telling me, like, look, just make me look good. And I was just like, okay. And because I knew all of her accomplishments, you know, firsthand, I was just like, okay, I'm going to go in here and I'm going to call her to the best of my ability, because she's a legend and I always respected her. But it's crazy to think about, you know, how they really just did not know how to book her. And you can even tell from the way that they were calling her action. Like, you had JR being the professional that he is, calling her and all of her action and all of her moves and stuff. But then on the other end, you had wild ass, I'm sorry, Jerry the King Lawler talking mess about, you know, the way that she looks, and because she wasn't feeding into the male gaze in that way. And a lot of her outfits, you know, they accentuated her body, but you still saw her muscles, you know, as well. You know, you saw more of that than you saw her other assets. And I really feel like because they were so used to being, you know, catered to, you know, in terms of that male gaze energy, they really didn't know what to do with Jazz, because Jazz was just out there to wrestle. She wasn't out there to be cute, you know, even though she did participate in those photo shoots that the Divas would have, you know, for those different calendars and magazines that they would have back in the day. That just wasn't her thing. And you know, just, and it's just really sad that they really didn't know what to do with her. And you are right that she was the right person and it was the wrong time. They didn't know what to do. And but she still shined through, which is the story of Black women as a whole, right? Even when stuff is tough, you know, our excellence will still shine through regardless, okay? And Jazz is definitely a testament to that. And like, during this match, you know, she still shone. And though the match was short, which is a complaint that could be across the board for back then, she won the championship. And when she won, she climbed those turnbuckles and said, "A real champ. I'm a real champ." And it was just like, yes.
That's what I said. I look back at all of her stuff then, I'm like, oh, sis, it was the wrong period. It was the wrong time. So they never were gonna gravitate to her. And I definitely think the King didn't help with his commentary. And that's why I always tell people, commentary is by far the hardest thing to do outside of taking a bump, because the ability to put someone either over or under is in your hands. And I think people don't realize, like, the responsibility that someone on commentary really has for a fan that is just, as a fan watching, that's your narration. That's who you're following the story with. So if your commentary is lackluster, or your commentary is just on some, like, oh, she ugly, she don't know what she's doing, she not like Trish, she ain't got her ass and titties out, then you're not going to go for it. You're going to be like, well, my narrator told me that X, Y, and Z, and that's what you remember. And I vividly remember the King just ODing, but that was that he OD'd on everybody, I feel like, for the most part. So I didn't take it personally. But I also, looking now as an adult, it's like, and knowing how hard commentary can be, it is super critical and crucial for someone on commentary to put over an up and coming talent or a new talent or anything of that nature. Because I even go and look at this past Elimination Chamber, the way commentary spoke about Tiffany Stratton, I was just like, yes, this is how you get people to sign up for what she is selling because of how you're talking about her. And I wish at the time Jazz really had someone, had an advocate, had a Paul Heyman in her back pocket to really advocate for her and to put her in better position.
Yeah, thank you, Daryl, for that compliment. I try my level best down there at Spartan Wrestling. I do my best by all of my talent. That's what I love to say. I do my best by all y'all. So I'm glad that you felt that way. So with Jazz being champion, this led, of course, to Jazz and Trish's rivalry, having Lita thrown into the mix, and this led to them having a match at WrestleMania X8. I'm gonna say X8 because I know y'all feel away if you don't say X7 or X8, you know. But you know,
like, ain't nobody stressed about like what? Ain't nobody stressed about how you say it. WrestleMania 18.
Yes, it's 18, but you know, X8, and this was a triple threat match for the women's title. And Jazz made history here because she was the first Black champion to go in as champion and come out as champion in this triple threat match. Of course, the second one would be Bianca Belair in talking about opening doors for people. And this match was really good. I've actually covered this match before in my Women of WrestleMania series that I did last year. This match was pretty hard hitting, even though it had the unfortunate, I would say the unfortunate responsibility of going after The Rock versus Hogan. It was crazy.
Yo, I was just saying this on our show earlier. I am a sicko, especially because like we've done our own shows. I am a stickler for match placement. There is no way that you can go so hot and then come after a match and think you're going to follow that up. No, you don't do that. And you don't do it with another singles match. This should have been a tag, a triple threat match. Should have been a tag match to get everybody to calm down and then bring it back up. But I stress match placement so hard because, not to say it make or breaks the pay-per-view, but the flow of it, it will make or break it. And you know, even we spoke about today about, you know, everyone's, you know, and I don't want to say in the uproar, but people complaining about what's going to be main event night one at WrestleMania. And I'm sitting here like, people always, you know, wrestling has always given us that, like, it has to be the main event. It has to be the main event in order for us to care. And I just want to go on record and saying opening a show is almost as hard as closing a show. And It's because You're the one that's kicking off all the energy in the room. You're the one getting the crowd pumped up for what's to come. There's a lot of responsibility for an opening match. And people always, you know, gravitate to, oh, no, I got to be the main event. I got to prove a point. When Kofi won, he wasn't the main event. It still mattered. And guess what? It took the air out of MetLife. No one else cared about anything else that happened after Kofi won. But it's to say that it's not always so much where it doesn't have to be the end of the match or the other main event. It can be wherever it is, but just don't put me after a high-profile match that everybody, the historical match that everybody talks about to this day. Like, come on. I expected better for them on that one because that was wild. I was like, how dare you put that on after them?
Yeah, that was a crazy placement, but I am glad that you were able to weigh in on that as, you know, a co-owner of Battle Club Pro. You do an amazing job with those shows, and it's just the idea that they had to go after that. But, and then on top of that, you know, they were even more hyped because Trish was from Canada, and they were in Canada. She had on her outfit, even though she didn't get to show it off a whole lot because she had to run to the ring because Jazz and Lita started fighting immediately. So, That was an amazing fashion moment. I love fashion and wrestling, but either way, this was a hard-hitting affair. This triple threat match was pretty insane. There were points where Trish and Lita even ganged up on Jazz themselves so they could take each other out, and of course Lita would do an amazing job with her high-flying abilities and of course her twist of fate things going on during her Team Extreme days and everything. You know, like, this match showed the best of them with the little time that they did have, but sadly enough, Trish was taken out of the equation at least two times by being thrown into the thrown into like a ring post, you know, and then even tangled up in the ring post. And I was like, that's really sad that she had a couple of good moments, but not a whole lot in her home country. But Jazz wound up winning the match, and it's just, you know, she wound up retaining that title and making history in that way. But the thing that I hate the most in history that people do is that they'll show the pictures from this match of Trish and Lita having a standoff in bigging up their rivalry and how big it was, but not, you know, giving credence to the fact that Jazz was in that match. And I'll never forget the first time I saw that. It was when they were talking about Trish and Lita's rivalry, and they showed this picture, and then when I went back and watched the match, I realized that this was from the Triple Threat, and I was just like, how are y'all acting like Jazz wasn't there?
You said, hold up, wait a minute. Somebody missing in this picture. Which it's, I think, crazy. Is wild because, you know, not fast forward, but, you know, with Jazz winning, coming into WrestleMania as champion and then leaving as champion, she was, if most people don't know, she was the last women's champion, like, with that belt. They ended up starting being WWF Women's Champion after she won this WrestleMania match. So she was the last, like, women's champion and the first WWF Women's Champion. And for that accolade not to be highlighted in her career, or when people talk about this match, or, you know, the lead up to this match, or even what happened after the match, because then, you know, they played it back with another triple threat the following year with her, Trish, and Victoria. And I was just like, why did we do that? Okay, fine. But It just shows you the accomplishments that Jazz had going in and coming out of this match, and it doesn't get talked about at all. It's like secondary, and it's unfortunate because to me that trumps any of what these two was ever going to do for me. I was like, listen, like, she went in, and not a lot of people can say they've gone into WrestleMania as champion and come out as champion, and she was the first Black woman to do that. So my hat always goes to her. The flowers always go to her because she laid that foundation to have those moments. Like, she had a moment. She had a WrestleMania moment without it feeling like a WrestleMania moment. And it's unfortunate.
Yeah, and then the crazy part about it is she essentially did what Charlotte did years later. You know, in being the last WWF Women's Champion and then them shifting over to WWE, Charlotte Flair did the exact same thing. She was the last Divas Champion WWE ever had, and she became the first WWE Women's Champion in that new era where the superstars were being just called superstars and no longer divas anymore. But they are very quick to give that to Charlotte, you know, in that way, but not giving that to Jazz, and that's just really crazy. I know it was some other stuff behind the scenes with that, but at the same time, you can't just ignore and erase, you know, Jazz's contributions to wrestling in WWE. You just can't. And I am hoping and praying for the day that they do put her in the Hall of Fame or find a way to honor her, because, you know, Trish does not get better in her in-ring acumen without fighting Jazz for these past 2 years. Like, it just doesn't make sense how they just erase her. Like, no, like, you can't just continue to erase this woman. This woman has done far too much, and I just don't like it, and I just want them to give her things. So after she retained her title, of course, you know, and we did talk about that, she wound up facing off against Trish Stratus again in a hardcore match with Steven Richards, who was the hardcore champion at the time after she assisted him, you know, in beating Bubba Ray / Bully Ray Dudley, you know, for the hardcore title, because she had challenged him for it. But then, you know, she just helped Steven do it, because, of course, with the hardcore title, everybody and their mama was running, trying to pin you, you know, for that title. So she helped him, and they were running on the run the whole time. And then, of course, Trish, you know, wound up getting in on their rivalry. And this was where it took another turn in a no DQ match, and then and then Steven Richards wound up getting the upper hand onto Trish Stratus and even super kicking her on this episode of Raw. You know, this was another thing that would happen a whole lot. We saw men contributing a lot to the outcomes of women's matches, and this was definitely the case here. Even though Jazz didn't necessarily need Steven, because of course she was a badass, Steven, you know, paid dividends for her, and she retained her title in that way, which of course would lead to them having the extreme match that I did mention, the extreme tag team match for both titles, with the hardcore title and the women's title. And in the midst of that, you had so many people trying to... Hilarious. Yeah, that's just incredible.
That man don't look nothing like that now, but that's so funny.
Yeah, watching this is a trip. This was just incredible, trying to get in on the action and trying to cover Steven Richards for the hardcore title. It was just a lot of the men popping up out of nowhere in this hardcore tag team match. But ultimately, Trish Stratus will wound up winning with the Stratus faction, and she will go on to tell Bubba Ray to put Jazz through a table, therefore taking her out of action for a couple of months because she had actually torn her ACL during their last encounter. So this was just a way for them to get her off television. But yeah, like, the men were getting in on the intergender action with that. But it's crazy that they did that after China left. But, you know, yeah. Yeah, it's just crazy. But, you know, she was out for a while. But then after that point, Trish started feuding with Victoria. And they definitely had one of the pillar feuds of the women's division at that time. They fought a whole lot as well. They actually wound up making history with this match right here, with their Chicago Street Fight, which is the first Divas Chicago Street Fight they ever had. Victoria was trying to choke Trish Stratus out here with the kendo stick. She was beating up a picture of her with Steven Richards, who was her on-screen boyfriend at the time. And it was just really wild stuff at that point. Like, Victoria was unhinged. Janelle, you have anything to add?
No, I mean, listen, best TV, hands down. Because she was wild. But that's what I loved about Victoria. Like, looking back, and she another one, too, that I don't feel like get as much, you know, as many flowers as she probably should. But, like, a lot of, like, those, like, matches that you started to take serious and you started to watch, she was a part of. And I always appreciated a funny storyline. Like, even her and Stevie Richards, Tozawa and Tamina, like, all stuff like stuff that don't make sense, I love, because I sometimes just want to turn my brain off. So in these moments of when I'm able to, like, just be a fan and not have to analyze it or overthink it, because once again, this is a time period we're not analyzing wrestling, we're just watching. Mm-hmm. Is now that, you know, we're older, you know, we have a platform and things of that nature where we analyze things a little differently. And also, too, as an adult, how you see things now is not how you saw things 10, 15 years ago. So it's just a mixture of everything. But, I mean, it was hilarious at the time.
Yeah, I couldn't stand Steven Richards at this point because he just kept getting in that business. And I think that's something that never changed about me. I never liked men getting in women's business. And that still hasn't changed. That has not changed about me.
Wait, so do you watch Housewives of Atlanta? I know this is random, but
no, I don't.
Yeah, because if you did, I really wanted to know how you felt about Peter being in their business like that all the time. But you don't watch it, it's okay. But yeah, Cynthia's ex husband, when they was on the show, Peter would always be, and Nene would always say, like, stop being a women's business. So, I mean, when men feel like they got to enter themselves in something, it's because they ain't got nothing else going on.
Right. Like, I don't like it.
Let us talk it out. Let us figure it out. And you don't got to be a part of that. So.
Exactly. Like, we don't need your brain in this because we have our own brains. Like, stay out of it. Like, I just didn't like it. Like, me and Steven Richards I had a lot of beefs with a lot of people back then. I did. I really did. I had lots of beefs with lots of people back then. It like, look, little Stephanie watching wrestling was a mess.
Wait, so who's your biggest beef with then?
Randy Orton.
Ooh. Okay. Yeah, Randall was a bit of a character.
It was Randy Orton and it was Triple H, actually, both of them.
Girl, can't be mad at Trip for being a Trip.
No, back then it was on site for me. Like, I did not like it.
Was it because of how he treated Shawn Michaels, or was it because of how he almost hit Vince McMahon with a sledgehammer and lied about the whole him and Stephanie thing? No,
it was just the fact that he was always cheating. I think this was around the time he was always cheating, and it just got on my nerves. And I was just like, bruh, like, anytime I would want somebody else to be world heavyweight champion, he would always find a way to cheat, and it would just irritate me.
Hilarious. It actually, that actually is Ric Flair's book 101.
Mm-hmm. Hated it. So when Batista came around and when he challenged him, I was thrilled. I was so thrilled.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. But going back to the women and Jazz and Trish, this is where Jazz actually made her grand return, because as Victoria won this street fight due to Steven Richards interfering on her behalf, Jazz pushed Victoria out the way, just shoved her out the way, and proceeded to attack Trish and just grab her hair and attack her more and more after she came back from her injury. And she was yelling at the referee, telling her what to do and everything. And it was just really hysterical. She was just like, you can't tell me what to do. Like, all right, you want me to do this? Fine. And she proceeded to put her down a whole lot more. And they all just had beef with each other. Trish had a beef with Victoria. Trish had a beef with Jazz. Jazz had a beef with the other two. So this led, of course, to them fighting at WrestleMania in another triple threat match. And this is actually the first WrestleMania I ever saw. The 19 in Seattle. So I saw this on DVD, and this was just the most incredible thing I'd ever seen. Like, I just couldn't believe any of the grandeur or all of that. Little did I know it would only get bigger. But
like I look back at the progression of WrestleMania, and I'm just like, we went from one night to two nights. We've been to some of the different cities, different experiences, and it's just like, I don't even think, looking back, I don't even think they thought that Mania would be as big as it is today.
Yeah, I don't think they did either. And then even just seeing this and then thinking about WrestleMania 20, like, that's even crazier too. Like, that, and that was in New York, and that's actually one of my favorite ones.
Yeah, that's the one that a lot of people don't talk about. But it's one of my, yeah. I do like WrestleMania 20, though.
Yeah, my favorite part about that was the Harlem Boys Choir singing. Like, that was fire. As a choir girl, that was everything to me. But in this match, like, it was definitely a showing of the best of all three of these women. Like, of course, Trish Stratus came in as a champion, and I believe she wound up retaining. Victoria was the champion. She wound up beating the Jazz and Victoria. But here again, the thing that I appreciate about the evolution of the Jazz and Trish feud was just how Trish Stratus was able to adapt her abilities to facing someone like Jazz, who, as you can tell in this picture, was outclassing her a lot of the time. When it comes to her wrestling abilities, like, she was able to duck a lot of her things and actually, you know, see it coming and just adapt her abilities to that. And that's something that I respect Trish Stratus a whole lot for. For someone who was, you know, made with the WWE system, she was always seeking to learn and seeking to hone her craft and get better, you know, to face off against a person like a Jazz or a Victoria or anybody like that. And I appreciated it. In these last few matches that Jazz and Trish would have. And then you have Victoria here, you know, just, they would just ragdoll Trish a lot of the time, but Trish tried her best.
She did. And what I do like, the fact that wrestling is a dance, and a lot of people forget that wrestling is a dance. So there's going to be certain parts where someone's going to take the lead in one way, and then another person's going to take the lead in another way. And I felt like this particular match, outside of their match the year before, this particular match, though, I felt like there were always a moment where someone was helping showcase another person's ability. It wasn't I'm looking out for me and getting all my shit in. It was, let me do this move to show how this person can get out of it, or show that this person can still get through this move and do something else. Like, it always, for me, it was always a showcase of each of their ability to not only present a match and a story, but it also so that the women can go in. Like, Victoria ain't somebody to play with. Jazz ain't somebody to play with. At this time, Trish Stratus, she was getting out of the "I'm just a pretty blonde girl and I'm wrestling. Like, she just had a whole street fight with somebody. Like, so they were all progressing in such a manner of like a way of it not just being what they're wearing or who they are. It's how are they being looked at in the ring. And I felt like this was one of the first women matches in that time period that really showcased each other. It wasn't one person was higher than the other. Definitely felt like there were moments in the match throughout it where each female got to shine. And that's hard in this business to even do it on a singles or one-on-one, but to be able to still shine in a triple threat, that speaks volumes.
You know, it's so funny. You said that line about Victoria not being somebody to mess with. And in one of her theme songs, that was one of her lines. Like, I ain't the lady to mess with. Like,
I got a funny story about her. I met her actually in a bathroom at a convention here in New York. Like, it just randomly. And we were in the bathroom and we were kikiing in the bathroom. And she was telling me how she had the restaurant in Chicago at the time. And I was just like, man, I got to go visit. You know, all this other stuff. I got a whole selfie with her and a random other girl. Like, I don't know, but that's what I love about wrestling is those unknown, unpredictable moments where you're like, oh my God, what is going on here? And you would have thought, I think I'm going to try to find a picture and send it to you. You would have thought we've been friends for years. How that picture was, it was like, it was a selfie. You know, when you do selfies, it's more personable. But it went from bumping into her in the bathroom to us kikiing and taking a picture and just, you know, enjoying each other. And, you know, me telling her, like, you know, listen, like, you did the damn thing then. Like, she's another one where it was the right person, wrong time. Like, just her style of wrestling, what she brought to the table, it just was a lot of those girls, it was just the wrong, it wasn't the right time. But it was the right person. Like, her, Mickey, you know, all those girls that came in that time, it was just like, damn, I really could be doing a damn thing, but they won't let y'all.
Yeah, and that's exactly why they go to places like TNA, to their, you know, famed knockouts division, and then knock it out of the park. It's crazy. But after, of course, that WrestleMania match and Trish wound up winning and becoming the champion, Jazz went and got more of a new attitude, and she wound up aligning with Hall of Fame legend, Alabama icon, Teddy Long, and he was her manager, and they were leaning more so into the whole Black Power instance of it, because if it's one thing you know about Teddy Long is that he is going to express his pride in being a Black member of the wrestling community. And this was where he was leaning into the interviews and stuff that he was having with Jonathan Coachman, you know, saying all kinds of things about the man trying to hold down Black talent. Like, Teddy Long was at his highest power when it came to stuff like this, and then when he was general manager. And he was also managing Jazz's husband, Rodney Mack, as well. So he was bigging her up and encouraging her more of her abilities. And this was also where Jazz, you know, took on the moniker of saying "the bitch is back." And this knocked me all the heck out when I was a kid, because I was always told that was a bad word. so the fact that she was calling herself this was just really new and a foreign concept to me. And then at the time, I wasn't listening to rap music, so I didn't know that was, you know, a cultural thing. So I was just kind of like, what the heck? Like, this was new to me. And then, you know, they were leaning into that, more of that aggression there. And this was him cutting a promo at the Backlash pay-per-view after WrestleMania 19, where she would go on to face off against Trish Stratus again. And this is a very iconic photo, a part of both of their careers that I've seen floating around a whole lot. You know, they fought each other. This was another match where Trish, you know, adapted to Jazz's abilities. But of course, it always pays to have you a good manager and a good valet in wrestling, because they can always see the things that you can't see, and they also interfere in the areas where, you know, the referee isn't looking, and they can be sneaky, because Teddy actually threw a shoe, one of his whole shoes, at Trish Stratus while she was trying to execute a move, and she got distracted and threw the shoe shoot right back at Teddy when Teddy was trying to blame it on the crowd or whatever. And then Jazz took advantage and wound up winning the championship again from Trish. And it was just really funny to see how that turned out. But just, it was just crazy. Like, Trish wasn't even champion for all that long when it comes to that. Because when you think of the timeline between WrestleMania and Backlash, that's not that much time.
Probably, if that.
Yeah, it's crazy. That's probably less than a month. So yeah. The fact that, you know, Jazz was able to win that title, you know, again through heel shenanigans, but also through her own abilities, which is really insane to look at. And that would basically be one of the final times they would have a one-on-one match, because later on she would go on to face Trish in a fatal four-way match between her, Trish, Jacqueline, and Victoria at Judgment Day. And I believe this is one of the pictures that belongs in a Black wrestling museum, because you see Jacqueline submitting Victoria and Jazz submitting Trish.
Look at the technicality in this. Look at that
Black excellence.
Come on, look at that. She done revved it up. Look at Jazz, she done revved that move up.
This is like the standoff picture that you could see. Like, this is like on Bianca Mercedes level of their standoff at WrestleMania. This is like Bianca and Jazz in the Royal Rumble this year. Like, this just belongs in a museum somewhere, and I don't see how I went my entire 30 years of life without having seen this picture until today. I can't. I just can't.
But that's why it's good. And that's why when you had originally had posted, you know, why don't they talk about these things? And that's why I was like, nah, we can talk about it. Let's talk about it. Because it's these moments that, you know, unbeknownst to us, are recreated even now in the type of stare downs and the type of matches that happen and things of that nature. So, like, I have a different appreciation of, you know, these type of rivalries and matches than I did then. So it's always important that no matter where in history that, you know, we're able to talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And in this match, though it was really hard hitting and though, you know, there was lots of ability shown here on the part of Jacqueline and Trish and Jazz and Victoria, Jazz wound up retaining the title, and she held on to the title for a long while, until on an episode, I believe, of Raw, there was a battle royal and she wound up losing the title to Gail Kim. And so after that point, you know, I believe Jazz and Trish's rivalry was over. Jazz had left the company due to creative issues and she was gone for a while. And then she wound up coming back and feuding with Mickey James for a short time, but she wound up leaving the company again. But even with that, you know, Jazz, you know, had such an amazing presence in WWE at that point that you just can't deny it even now. And I am so glad that we were able to talk about, you know, this. And even Trish Stratus to this day in different interviews, she will give Jazz all the credit, you know, for helping skyrocket her career with their feud. So it's just really great to be able to talk about their feud and how it set the precedent for a lot of the stuff that we see now with feuds. And even talking about that as a natural transition from, you know, China and Ivory, you know, it's just really good stuff. So yeah, this was an amazing episode, an amazing act one to our women's rivalries series that we will be doing, you know, later on in the month. Janelle, thank you so much for joining me for this.
Thank you. Anytime I get to not talk to two other Haitian brothers, I will always take the opportunity to do so, because they drive me crazy. But no, like I've always told you on and off camera, I'm always proud of what you've done. You, just as much as you say I inspire you, you inspire me. And it definitely was something that, you know, when I did, you know, on our end, I do a big four. And when I started it, for me, it was just, I wanted to create a space for women to talk about wrestling. It didn't have to be non-judgmental. It didn't have to be, you know, such a factual-based type of situation. But it's just a conversation. So I'm glad and I'm lucky and I'm blessed that we were able to have this conversation and also remind people of things that happened. Like, people don't sometimes remember that, oh shit, Jazz walked into WrestleMania and walked out as champion. You know, China having the neck injury storyline. I didn't remember that with Right to Censor. Like, people always remember, like, her and, you know, Eddie Guerrero, or her and DX. So her standing on her own 10 toes and having that type of feud that she had to then win the title at WrestleMania, not a lot of, once again, not a lot of women can say they've had their WrestleMania moment. And I would say that both of the ladies, you know, Chyna and Jazz, really all of the ladies, when you're included in that, you have your WrestleMania moment. And that's why I said, if they didn't have moments like that then, we wouldn't have been able to see Sasha and Bianca main event WrestleMania. We wouldn't have been able to have, you know, Bianca be this new undefeated streak type of situation for WrestleMania. Like, it definitely, those ladies laid out the blueprint for women's wrestling today. And, you know, it should be highlighted. It should be appreciated. So I'm thankful that we were able to get on and, you know, and also just rattle some cages. Like, I encourage everybody that out there, whether you have a platform or not, have these conversations, because they are a part of wrestling history.
Absolutely. And in speaking of wrestling history, our next episode in the next few weeks, we will be talking about the Four Horsewomen and a number of their rivalries as well, with Becky and Charlotte and Mercedes, Sasha and Bayley. So I can't wait to get into that. So Janelle, tell everybody where they can find and follow you and what you've got going on at this point.
You guys can follow the Jabba Tears podcast on all social media platforms at the Jabba Tears Podcast on Facebook, X, LMNOP, all of that stuff. What we have going on, we have our WrestleMania viewing party here in New York, and we're actually, I believe, in the works of trying to do one in Philly as well. So stay on the lookout for that information as well. Yeah, it's a lot going on for Philly that we've been working on behind the scenes. So let's see if they come into fruition. So we got WrestleMania weekend coming up in Philly. So anyone that's out there, please come out. Say hey. My good friends at Mania Club, they're having a tailgate 2 days, both nights. Wally Mania, all that, you know, everything. Just make sure to have fun. I always tell people, it's WrestleMania weekend. Enjoy yourself. After that, Battle Club Pro is back 2024. Let's go. April the 28th, Sunday, April the 28th. We'll be back live and in color, Battle Club Pro. And then from there, we'll be on the road to Jabba Slam 4, which will be all in weekend as well. So we'll be having both the show Saturday, and then we'll also be having a viewing party / brunch party / let's recap what happened at Jabba Slam the next day. So we're super excited. We got a lot of things in the works. Once again, and I'm always thankful that I can carve out time to do things like this, because they are important, and I never want to feel like we forget those things that made us who we are. So I love doing these little side projects, and it always gives me a fresh, like, all right, let's go, let's be hungry, let's go get it. So I look forward to seeing what the next season brings, and hopefully seeing everybody in Philadelphia for WrestleMania weekend.
Absolutely. And of course, you know, you can follow me, your girl Stephanie Hardy, on Instagram and Twitter /X at Queen Steph Hardy. Listen to the Hardy Wrestling Podcast everywhere you get your podcast. Subscribe, like, and share to the YouTube channel. Of course, check out the latest episode of Steph and Kat Talk WoW with me and Katrina from NCAT We Trust, where we talked about the latest episode of WoW Superheroes. And a new episode is coming on this weekend. So watch that, so you can watch the new episode next Wednesday. And enjoy my posts, of course, for Women's History Month. I'm continuing my highlights on social media, so I hope you guys are enjoying that. They're getting really good interactions. And also, just continue to read my articles on Daily DDT. And of course, book your girl for commentary. I'm open all 2024. Book your girl, book your girl, book your girl, because I want to hone my craft. So please book your girl. And of course, you know, I might be having a new episode of HWP this weekend, because there's so much stuff to talk about with WrestleMania season further on the horizon. There's crazy stuff going on, and I just feel like I need to come on and just talk more about it. But yeah, I've been doing so many side things that it's just hard to do like a main episode. But I do hope that you guys have been enjoying my content lately, because, you know, we're working hard out here. We're trying to make stuff happen. So I hope you guys are having a fabulous International Women's Day and an amazing Women's History Month. So celebrating the women in your life and just be good to each other. So with that being said, this has been the Hardy Wrestling Podcast and Jobber Tears Podcast collaboration. And until next time, bye y'all.